This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. The end of the year, heading into Christmas, should be a quiet time for folks to prepare for the holidays. But in KL is a performing group from Australia, whose membership is made up of Australians and Malaysians. This group, under the umbrella of Murdoch University, will be performing a musical titled A Toy's Journey. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll start with you, Associate Professor of School of Arts, Murdoch University, Jenny D. Rook. What is this about?
It's a lovely story, actually. A colleague of mine, who at the time wasn't employed at Murdoch, Audrey Fernandez Satar, has been doing some research into the Museum of Toys in Australia, and particularly into the toys of migrant children. And in that context, she decided that it would be useful to kind of liberate them. She's a beautiful visual artist, and she drew them, devised them, brought them back to life in a way, and used them as stories with migrant children in the Kwinana part of Perth. Her stories of the toys of the migrant children, and she selected three of them particularly, Pauline, a doll, and two soft toys. One was Hanin and a soft toy rabbit, and the other one was Moose, a little mouse. And she used the stories of those toys to talk to the migrant children, refugee children, in fact.
And were the refugee children in Perth?
In Perth, in the Kwinana region. She was a student of mine as well, a PhD student. We collaborated on the idea that these stories had a liveliness that could be as a dramatic story. And she and her partner, husband, Arif, got the funds together from the Australia Council and from the WA Community Arts Group, and we put together a lovely little dramatic project, which meant that we'd have to devise and develop a story using the talents of the people that I knew to,
so it started
to create
with, it. It started with her, you found out about it, and it's now something much larger. You brought in two other people.
At least two other people. We brought in six actors altogether. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a whole collaboration with Murdoch University staff and students, and then just developing it as a storyline, but a dramatic storyline with music and lyrics.
Do we now have this story in the form of a musical?
I'll let Nick decide and tell you about
it. Okay, Nick Chu, you are from Malaysia. We have known you for a while. You are studying music and theatre. Musical mm-hmm. theatre is your area.
That's right. I wouldn't call it a musical, though. It would be more a play with songs.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more dialogue and action mm-hmm. and interaction with the audience than the actual songs. But it's almost entirely supported by music in the background, which I will be playing live throughout the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you say you play this music live, what's the instrumentation?
I am on the keyboard, but it's set up to a computer, so you have the various sounds and the various layers. But then there are full songs. I won't give away how many songs, but there are full songs, and those are fully arranged so that it's a fuller sound happening.
Only one musician at the keyboard.
At the keyboard.
Creating all the diverse sounds of strings and brass. And
pretty much.
Absolutely, yes.
Very talented.
A talented musician. We love Nick.
Now, Sarah Curtis, you are the lyricist.
That's right.
What does that mean? Because this whole thing started off already with a narrative.
Yeah.
What is your role?
Basically, what I do as the lyricist is I take the story by reading the script from Jenny and by understanding the background from the other artists. And I work closely with Nick, and we've worked together on several projects. Mm-hmm. And I find a theme or a through line or something which needs to be expressed through song, and I craft that story. So sometimes there'll be a gap that Jenny will say, there'll be a song here to explain this part of the journey. And I'll figure out what that means and how to weave the journey together so that the song and the story can mesh together nicely and seamlessly.
Maybe this is a good time to get into definitions. What's the difference between a play with songs and a musical?
Mostly, I'd say, number of songs mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. they relate. So a musical would usually have quite a few songs. And they would be integral to the telling of the story. A play with songs, they don't necessarily have to impact the plot, although ours do. Our songs do tell part of the story and they do help push the narrative along, but we don't have as many songs, so we can't technically be called a musical.
You are the academic professor. Are definitions like these important at all?
I don't think so. The genre is always, of course, interesting, and it's nice to have a starting point. But I think, as you would know, somebody who's interested in Shakespeare, the greatest breaker of all genres who did not follow any rules was the bard himself. And not that, you know, we aspire to quite those heights, but by the same token, we believe that there's a balancing act to be found between, you know, as you say, a fully-fledged through-line, through-story musical and what we do, which is a play with the focus being our audience of young people, of children, and with that in mind, I've always found that the music just allows that moment of where children or young students can actually just engage with it at another level. There's a moment of rest, but also engagement without the kind of having to follow the story in quite the way that the dialogue insists that they do. The plays I've written have always had a very strong, if you like, intellectual, educational base to them. And this is one of those that has, I guess, a message, but a kind of tacit message. And the music Nick plays all the way through, and the songs come in at 3 or 4 points in the entire production. They just enhance the dramatic flow of the text.
I'm going to pick up something from what you've just said. So the play of this production is targeted at children.
Yes, yes, children in the primary school. I mean, the plays I've written over the years have always had a kind of a multiple level focus, because I do think it's lovely to include the family, so they're family focused. And there are things for adults in this as well as for children. There's one particular number that's probably really understood by adults rather than the children. But I feel very strongly that we need to respect young audiences, and we try, as a children's performing group for 20 years in Australia at Murdoch Uni, we try very hard to maintain that respectful engagement with our target audience and keep it real for them.
What assumptions do you make of the audience when they are children?
That's a good question. And I think the assumption I make is that, and I probably get this from one of the great theorists of theatre, but the assumption is that you do what you do for children as you would for adults, only better. Because they are very...
You don't have to care about the adults.
But the thing with children is they are, if you lose them, you've lost them. And adults will play the code game and, you know, they'll discreetly walk out at interval. They won't storm out. Sometimes they do, but we've never had that experience. But,
only critics do.
Critics do that. That's exactly right. But, yeah, with our productions, we try to make sure that the children are the target and that they're the focal point for what we do. We engage them, and my actors, and this is why it's been lovely working with this team again, is they are so dynamic. They maintain the level, the quality of the performance all the way through.
The energy level has to be high too.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Now, you started off by telling me that there was some discovery of these dolls.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that we are going to see puppets or dolls in this production?
There are dolls and there are puppets. They're not active. What's happened is that I've written a script in which those dolls have been turned into characters, and they're performed by adult performers, the student group or the postgraduate group that have come with me.
What's the story about?
I guess it's about a journey to find a lost toy and to find yourself, the characters are finding themselves in this journey and helping one another using the powers that are given to them.
So who is the storyteller? Is it a toy that's doing the storytelling, or is the child that's looking for this toy?
I guess the closest to a narrator or a storyteller would be my character, the Chitty Chitty, or a Willy Wagtail. And she's a little bird who is trying to help the toys and help restore everyone.
I'm speaking with Associate Professor Jenny DeRook from Murdoch University, Sarah Curtis, lyricist, and Nick Chu, the composer. All three are part of a production from Australia titled Home at Last, A Toy's Journey, which opens this Friday at the Temple of Fine Arts in Brickfields. Coming up, the balancing act of a travelling musical or a travelling play with songs. This is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're tuned to Front Row, the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. A musical is here in town, and it has come all the way from Perth, Australia. And with me are three who are involved in the production: Associate Professor Jenny DeRook of Murdoch University, Sarah Curtis, lyricist, and Nick Chu, music composer. And Nick Chu, of course, is from around here. When this show was conceived, what considerations did you give to travelling it?
That was part of our grant application right from the very beginning. We were hoping for something a little larger to begin with, and it had to be curtailed because of the funding capacity that we were. As
we
is
must
the
talk
case.
About funding.
We will talk. but the idea from the very beginning was that there would be an iteration of it in Perth at Nexus Theatre, Murdoch University, and that we would travel to Malaysia, because we felt this was 2015. We thought the whole issue around refugees and the situation of refugee children particularly was something that needed to be surfaced in our region. So, and without, you know, thumping a political kind of tub at this point, it wasn't really so much about that. It was about trying to explore the notion of loss, memory, the journey, and the arrival, I suppose. Those were the kind of concepts that Audrey and I were talking about at the time. And we felt that while obviously it was really interesting to perform it in Australia and Perth, it was also very important to take it further. And our links and our established contacts were here in Kuala Lumpur, because we've travelled with children's theatre to Kuala Lumpur before, as well as to Johor Bahru. So that was the initial concept. We would travel it, and in fact that was part of our grant application and one of the things that was not adequately but partially funded.
I mean, I think it's appropriate and relevant for you to be here, because we have many different refugee groups in Malaysia, even though we are not signatories to the convention about refugees. In doing this, though, once you have conceived that this will travel, what did you have to bring to bear in terms of building the set, the kind of music, the language of this production? Because in Australia, you're still dealing with refugee kids who might not be able to speak the language, speak English. And then now you're coming to Malaysia. Beyond the consideration of funding, what did you have to deal with?
Well, we're very fortunate in that Murali, Dr. Pillay, is based here and at the Temple of Fine Arts, which is where we're going to be performing. So he has an infrastructure that we've been able to utilise. He's also one of the characters and actors in the play. So he knew precisely what we needed to do and what needed to be reinvented back here. So in terms of set and production, we knew from the beginning that we'd have to have a travelling set. We knew what the parameters were. It's not a set that we have brought with us, but we've known what needed to be recreated here. So we kept it minimalist. So the set itself is minimalist. The sound and the work that Nick is doing to bring it to life, and also my actors and their costumes, are the things that enliven the space. It could go anywhere, really, but we do have a couple of really nice little structures that we won't, no spoilers, we won't let you know about, but they've been built here by the infrastructure. So we were aware from the beginning it needed to be travel-worthy and light.
When you performed it in Australia, did Dr. Murali participate?
Yes, yeah.
When you performed it in Australia, what did you have to do to engage with the audience? Going back to this notion of the language.
Yeah. I'll just say a little bit and let the others see if I'm right about this. What I find is children, they watch a lot of media. They're literate in the visual arts. They're visually literate. So your language, in a sense, even if it's foreign, if children are visually literate, which they are, and your performance goes in that direction and is enhanced by sound, I find that people are very, very able to respond. We had very young children in the audience, 2 and 3 years old, rapt. It's a 50-minute show, so it's not long, and they were totally entranced and engaged by the lights, the sound, the action of the play. And that's something, as a writer, I'm really very, and a director, I'm really very aware of in trying to make happen.
Which then leads me to the lyricist, because the lyricist would want her words to be understood and heard, right? When you're dealing with 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds who are rapt visually, they are engaged with the lights and the sounds, what happens then to the lyrics?
What I like to do with the lyrics is make sure they are simple and clear, so that a lot of the meaning does come through the music. So I usually draft something that is just the basic essence of what the song needs to be and what sort of message it needs to get across. And then when I send it to Nick, he then enhances it. He builds upon it. He repeats things. He builds motifs and themes so that it can be part of the entire show.
How important is it for a young audience to go to a production like this Well, you know, they need to understand everything. They need to know the story completely.
I'm not at all important. No. I wouldn't have thought not at all. No, they come away with bits and pieces when they're very little. They might not get the whole story. Older children really respond to the story, the storyline itself. It's a very interactive production in some ways because we use the audience as a starting point. We engage directly with the audience. They're asked to hashtag bring their toys so that the toys can participate because it is all about toys, not so much. And yeah, it's and then as I say, one of the other things perhaps we haven't mentioned is the fact that Nick plays the thematic tunes, the links underneath the production. Right. So all the actors and the scenes are enhanced and the repetitions come back so that the music is crucial, as are the lyrics, but crucial to the effect.
And the music, I assume, will somehow affect us without us knowing about
it. Exactly. Yeah.
How would you describe your music?
catchy, I hope.
Yeah. Very catchy.
Cheerful, because it's for kids. Yeah. There's one surprisingly unexpected song which we've thrown in there, and I think it'll be very obvious why it's unexpected when the audience watches the show, but I think one of the key words we've mentioned is repetition, and I think for children's theatre it's so important to have music that relates to the characters. So Chitty Chitty, for example, has her theme, and whenever she appears, that music is heard. So the kids will automatically, hopefully, link the theme of the music to the characters.
It's kind of like Darth Vader before he comes.
That's You know exactly who's coming.
We hear that music.
The bad guy has... The bad guy.
There's not even
is there
bad,
a bad guy? That's the question. But yeah, the bad guy has his own theme. These characters, other characters have their theme and songs related.
I understand that this production is funded by Beyond the University, the Australian Council for the Arts, and the Western Australia's CAN Initiative. What is that?
It's Contemporary Arts Initiative, Contemporary Arts Network.
Why would an Australian organization fund something that's being taken to Malaysia?
What's
the benefit?
I mean, I think the benefits are in some ways obvious because it's about exchange, about intercommunication, you know, a link across around the Indian Ocean Rim. I'm part of a group of researchers who are really fascinated by very obvious links around the Indian Ocean Rim and kind of an outward viewing towards other spaces can only make us more aware of who we are, I think. An understanding of other cultures is something that we're looking at as part of that in broader project. This, I think, was something that they were very keen on, particularly the Australia Council. They really felt that this was something we should do because of the cross-cultural and intercultural connections that we could make across the Indian Ocean. And it's a very West Australian story, though. That's the other thing I need to say. While the meta-narrative, you know, the larger story is something that will, you know, appeal across borders and boundaries, the actual specifics are quite local, and we're hoping... We didn't change anything for the show here because the characters are Australian animals and also Australian toys, or toys that have come into Australia. So we've got a local story which we hope will transcend boundaries.
As somebody who is also in the industry and aware that there are theatre groups in Malaysia that are always screaming out that we cannot do this or we cannot do that or that we have to work with a shoestring budget, how is funding done for something like this?
With difficulty. we are operating on a shoestring. There was enough funding to provide for airfares and accommodation. But in terms of reimbursement, remuneration for time, this is a voluntary project. We're lucky in a sense we have the support of Murdoch University, Nexus Theatre, the theatre management there. So we've been able to use and rehearse in spaces that have given to us, as it were. So there are hidden expenses which we've been able to subvent by dint of the generosity of people. But yeah, it's not easy, and everybody needs more funding than we get.
Is this industry the same all over the world that is always seeking or standing in a corner with a tin cup asking funders? If that's the case, why are there, based on my understanding, lots of people interested in enrolling in a performing arts school?
Yeah.
Why is that? What's the appeal?
It's a passion, isn't it? It's a vocation. And it's like any of these things. You know, we those of us in the arts, we do this. We hope we'll be able to earn a living from it. Mostly, we do it because we love it. Isn't that why?
There's no other reason to do it. If you don't love what you do, then why are you doing it?
Yeah.
No, because it's such a poorly remunerated kind of profession. Based on my research about what's happening in America, you know, they don't even give you a yearly income. They can only break it down by hourly rate. That's and to some extent, it's true also in Australia.
Absolutely, yeah.
But in terms of what's happening at Murdoch, what kinds of students are you getting? I mean, the numbers.
We have a small theatre and drama department, but a very successful one, one that in the last little while has lifted off. And I say this because in the last 5 or 6 years, not only do we have the students coming through the theatre and drama department itself, we've had a more than doubling of our enrolment and an increase in numbers in the last year, but we have very, very active theatre companies, multiple companies, five, I think, at one point, on campus. They're not that many now, but they're all, so there's an active and dynamic set of activities around theatre and drama on the campus. I think the thing to say about this is that Murdoch is not a training institution in the sense that WAPA, the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, is at ECU, or NIDA, National Academy of Drama and the Arts in Sydney. But we do provide a degree of craft and training, but we also, being an academic institution, we train our students, we develop them intellectually in the field. And this is why we've been so fortunate at Murdoch, and particularly my last couple of years have been so fortunate. We've had numbers of students coming through into the postgraduate arena, and many of them, not excluding those who are here today, will not necessarily become actors or, you know, actors or musicians in the field entirely on their own, but they will have the academic background to position themselves professionally elsewhere in addition while they develop their craft and their skills, which are wonderful. I mean, this is a really wonderful group that have come through. And this group that are participating in Home at Last are almost to a person, PhD candidates, or have completed PhDs. So they're all doctoral candidates and researchers.
Okay, now coming back to this performance, how many people are going to be on stage?
Got you. Six.
Was it six? I believe it's six.
Six of us, yeah, including our musician who's on stage.
Oh, that's six.
Seven.
Six, seven?
No, it's six with you because there are five characters.
We know our show. We've done this before.
There are five characters and a musician, so there's six.
Yeah. The musician is a character as well.
He's a character, yeah.
And you will have several different kinds of toys on the stage.
That's right, yes, and some mysteriously beautifully designed by Audrey and Arif. They are doing the set design for Malaysia. They've created a, what would you call it, a little kind of, what's it called, a GIF?
Anyway,
but in addition to that, they've created the set, they've designed the set for us. So it's the piece that you'll be seeing here is new to Malaysia. It's not what we saw in Perth. So there's a new design which they're bringing across, and they've created some lovely little abstract toys which will be on stage as part of our simple but very, very evocative set.
Now, because you're performing for children and you have said that it's going to be interactive, are the children going to be sitting on the floor or are they going to be in, you know, your auditorium seats?
We have both, I think. We're going to encourage the children to be down on the floor so that there's a bit of the interaction can occur. It's particularly with Chitty Chitty, who's the wagtail. She's very much engaged.
I spend a lot of time with the children and the toys.
And their toys, yeah.
Home at Last, A Toy's Journey will play at the Temple of Fine Arts Kanagasabai Studio this Friday, December 1st at 7:30 p.m. and then on Saturday at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. For bookings, write to toyboxproductionsau@gmail.com. Tickets are priced at 30 for adults and 20 for children, with concessions at 20 and 10. This is Front Row and The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. And thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.